Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
From the birthplace of modern winemaking, Sonoma, California, welcome to The Winemakers. Local experts Sam Couture, Bart Hansen, and Brian Casey, along with host John Myers, invite you to listen in as they discuss all facets of winemaking. So sit back, pour yourself a glass, and let's hear what the guys have to say this week.
Oh, yeah. Hello, and welcome to The Winemakers. This is Brian Casey with Bart Hansen, Sam Couture, and we got a special guest today. So we're talking to the winemaker from Mountain Tide, Scott Kirkpatrick.
How's it going?
Hey, it's going good, man. And you brought rosé, so I'm a very happy guy.
We did. I brought a couple of them.
Yeah. You know, Scott, you brought a whole bunch of wine, and for a small new winery, it's very ambitious. And cheers to you for jumping right in, man.
I know.
One variety, and how many different wines is there?
After the end of this year, we'll end up with, in 18, I think we have eight SKUs.
Eight SKUs.
Wait, and when did you start the winery?
2016.
And what did you start with for the first year?
Just
for the
one.
First vintage? And what was it?
That was our 2016 Clements Hills Petite Syrah.
Okay.
And then in 17, we did that again. We added the Contra Costa Petite Syrah.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2017, we did our first rosé, also from the Clements Hills Vineyard.
And what was the idea behind the rosé?
The rosé, I was, when I drink rosé, I generally want something that's just light, fresh, uplifting, not too complicated, but mm-hmm. also with like quite a bit of structure to it.
Yeah.
And the whole project, you know, I only make wine from Petite Syrah, but I wanted to see if it was possible to make, Petite Syrah lighter in general, not light for the sake of being light, but I thought it'd be possible to make a pretty light Petite Syrah rosé that'd still be aromatic and be pretty. Turns out from that vineyard in Clements Hills, there's not so much, it's not super expressive aromatically, but the texture and the structure is right where I want it.
Right.
It's much more on the mineral side.
Yeah. Yeah. And why Petite Syrah? Okay, so let's talk about it. All the wines that you brought today are Petite Syrah based.
All are Petite Syrah.
And nothing blended into them?
Nothing, no.
Okay.
Yeah. The only thing that's really blended is the California blend, which is a blend of all the vineyards that we work with.
Okay. And so Petite Syrah because?
The short answer is kind of I didn't know of anybody doing it the way I thought it maybe could be done.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, more curious than sure that that it could be done in a little bit lighter style, a little bit fresher. I work at a custom crush place in Napa called 1111, which is a great place, and I've been there for now almost 6 years. But
and 1111, they have their own label also.
They do, yeah. Yeah, so we make quite a few wines. We have three vineyards in Napa.
Okay.
We have about 30 acres or so of vineyard where we grow Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, Syrah, Malbec, Merlot, Riesling.
Riesling.
Yeah.
Napa Valley Riesling.
Right on the Napa River.
Cool.
And it makes a great wine.
And how long have you been with them?
I was their first employee ever.
Okay. Wow.
So I started first week of November in 2013, which was right after my first harvest, which I did in St. Helena at a place called Honeycut. And my roommate had a friend who called me up one day as my internship was ending, and I was kind of thinking that maybe I was going to have to move away because I couldn't afford to stay here anymore. And he's like, hey, I'm working at this new brand. They just bought this new facility. They need somebody to help clean it up, sweep the floors and stuff. He's like, if you do a good job, maybe they'll let you stick around.
And so whose facility is 1111? Who was it before?
So it had been owned by the bank for quite a few years.
Right.
But originally it was the Barrel Stop Winery.
Okay.
Or Dominari.
Okay.
Which had a fairly unfortunate ending from what I have come to learn from people coming to visit the winery after we opened up.
But, right.
One
of those places where you go and you have a shaman come out and clean it of all of its
definitely
bad energy.
You have to sweep up and burn a lot of sage.
Right. Yeah.
Smudge the...
Wow. I'm so much more intrigued by what they were doing before that place.
But yeah, so So we got, they bought that property, hired me basically the next day, and turns out I'm pretty good at sweeping floors.
You know the business end of a pressure washer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The non-business end, too.
Right.
No.
And did you know how to drive a forklift?
I learned my first harvest.
Yeah.
But I'm somebody who, I just want to learn and dig into things. And so even right away in harvest, you know, maybe the first week, I just got certified maybe that day, and I was...
Certified?
Like, yeah.
You mean wear the seatbelt?
Yeah.
Seatbelt?
That's down.
But it's like I wanted to dump grapes right away because I kind of came into this without a... From a restaurant background where I was... You know, I got my certified... Passed my level 2 certified sommelier exam when I was living in Louisville, Kentucky. But the moment I walked into the cellar, I realized how little I knew. And it was just like, I don't know what to do with all these hoses and clamps and pumps. Yeah. And
I don't have that. That's not part of the SOM certification.
It is not. I think it should be.
It really should be. I mean,
you should know how to operate a Waukesha.
Brian's like, what? Brian, you're going to learn this year.
It's not even learn to operate a Waukesha, but you should learn how to clean the drains and, you know, scrape out a press and, you know, sanitize 12 tanks and wash 43 barrels, you know. I mean, people need to understand that it's not walking around with a glass with the winemaker tasting tanks. I mean, yes, absolutely, that's part of it, but it's all the janitorial part is the most important part.
It's probably 80% cleaning.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's, I think that's on the light end.
Yeah.
Well, so especially in an old facility.
So yeah, we, I was just lucky to land in a really great spot with great people who owned it. And
that's awesome.
They gave me a chance, which is all I have ever asked for. Cause I know that I'm not going to let myself fail unless something crazy happens. So all I ask for is them, you know, give me a chance. Let me learn and I'll work hard for you and do whatever needs to be done. And now I'm the cellar master of that facility, and we've grown considerably over the past few years. And
so who's the deliver grapes there from somebody?
Who's the winemaker there?
Yeah, we do. The winemaker. We have a consulting winemaker who's Kurt Venge.
Okay. Oh yeah.
And then
the famous Kurt Venge.
Yeah.
No, our associate winemaker, kind of my coworker, his name is Brett Weiss.
Okay.
He's a great dude.
Cool.
But there's a lot of wine that's made there for a lot of different winemakers, right?
Yeah. So we definitely get quite a few Oakville Ranch picks for Andy.
That's where Andy's grapes go.
And a couple of his and a bunch of his clients.
Oh, then you must be a good facility if Andy lets you make his wine for him there.
Yeah.
Hey, Andy, you listening?
We take a lot of pride in.
That's Andy Erickson for those folks scoring at home.
We would go like this.
Yeah. No, so we have a great facility, and thankfully the owners are willing to invest in the right people and in the right equipment. And we did kind of start fresh when we moved in. I helped them sell all the equipment that was in the building, and we came in with everything fresh and have been able to kind of grow it the way we wanted it to be done.
Smart.
Which has been great.
Yeah. Cool.
And then, in 2016, I asked them, you know, hey, what would you charge me if I made a ton and a half of fruit? And I still had no idea where the fruit was going to come from, but they were.
Then why'd you pick a ton and a half? You just figured it had to be a little more than a ton?
Because it fits in a 48 bin.
Okay.
And I could stay out of the way and do all the work on my own time.
Right.
And that's a nice, clean, like 75 cases. But I still didn't know. And they're like, yeah, we'll let you do a ton and a half for free. The owners talked about it, and And we still give that as a perk to our full-time seller staff.
Seriously?
Yep.
Nice.
It's just such a great way to learn.
Perks.
And
Brian's going to polish up his resume.
Yeah.
Better
learn how to sweep.
Sorry, no.
But yeah, so we... And then from there, we just kept growing a little bit because the first one went real well. And,
So let me just dive in a little bit.
Yeah.
So you decide you want to make a wine, but what are your plans? Do you have any experience selling wine?
I do have experience selling wine in the sense of I ran a wine program in a restaurant.
Okay.
For a while.
And so you saw what so the reps came to you.
Yes. Okay. So I understand the three-tier system, unfortunately, and
rather not.
Yeah. Yeah. But and I you know spent my pre-wine life being an artist and understand what it's like to make something that most people don't even know exists and try and get a lot of people to care about it.
Yeah.
And in that you were a musician, you told us.
I was, yeah. So I played music for several years.
And what sort of music?
I guess you'd call it's mostly me and a guitar. Yeah. I think of myself as a songwriter more than a musician.
Right.
But,
singer songwriter.
I've had bands as well, but it's pretty chill. Yeah,
kind of like roots, like Americana.
Less Americana, more just I don't know. Like I've been doing this for so long, I should really have an answer for this by now. But
most people would consider
it like folk music.
Folk music, okay.
A lot of my inspirations are like great songwriters, like obviously like Bob Dylan, but more narrowly songwriters like Will Oldham or Phil Elverum, who are not as well known, but
sort of the petite sirrah of the songwriting.
Yeah,
world.
Exactly. But yeah, then I don't think I answered your early question, like why petite sirrah, and I didn't know a lot of people making it the way I thought it could be made because I see a lot of petite sirrah, or I have seen a lot of petite sirrah in the day job, and it always comes in. It's so beautiful and fragrant and. The fermentation smells so great, and then, but it's definitely getting picked. You know, this is Napa fruit generally getting picked pretty high sugar levels, and at the end, you just there'd be this dense, high alcohol wine that certainly has a place and is wonderful in the right context, but it's not a wine that I can generally open up at home with my wife and enjoy.
Yeah,
and especially coming from a food and wine background. I just was curious more than anything. It was like, is it possible to make petite sirrah that can go with more than just a steak or a burger?
How much of the petite sirrah that you see in the day job actually gets bottled as petite sirrah, and how much of it is used to fix other things and blends? And I mean, is, you know, petite sirrah, again, you know, it's the Phil Elverum of the singer song. Did I even say that right? But people probably drink a lot more petite sirrah than they realize.
Absolutely.
When they're drinking those Napa cabs and things like that, right?
Yeah, it's often used as a color addition or as a, you know, mid palate weight addition, or a structural addition. We did have a few people bottling. You know, a lot of times you'd end up with, you know, five or six barrels of petite sirrah, and you end up bottling three, right? Because the rest get lost in other things. Mm-hmm.
I mean, at Kenwood, we always the big Zinfandel tasting wasn't a matter for the. We did all the Wiener Designates, and then we made the Sonoma Valley, and the last tasting was always how much petite could we get in it, you know, and it was 2-4%. You know,
without tasting like petite.
Right, because it tends to, I mean, you know, I say it, Zinfandel can be a very, you know, subtle grape if done right, made with intent.
For sure.
But petite sirrah can overpower it very quickly. But the right amount, it completes the wine, right? So.
Yeah, so we were lucky to find a really nice vineyard in Clements Hills AVA out in Lodi. For our first vintage, and we still work with that vineyard now, and then have kind of added on a little bit at a time. In 18, we added on quite a bit more, but that enabled us to do our California petite sirrah for the first time, which was always kind of something I wanted to do because I wanted to make wine that I could have afforded when I was learning about wine.
Right,
that was always something that was important to me, or make wines that my friends can buy.
Yeah,
so
it's funny how often that comes up.
Yeah, it is.
That sentiment, especially from, you know, sorry to say this on your birthday, Brian, for people in our generation that, you know, that quote-unquote millennial and younger kind of crowd that isn't at a place where they can afford, most of the wines that we make in this, you know, especially Napa Sonoma region.
They're not made for us to consume here.
Right, they're made for
daily.
Us to...
Daily, correct.
Yeah. Certainly.
So these two rosés here, mm-hmm. one Contra Costa County. Mm-hmm. What is the vineyard source for that?
So that is coming from the town of Byron.
Okay.
From the I'm blanking on this.
That's all right.
The...
So the Contra Costa is, you know, very sandy soils.
Yes.
The Clement Hills isn't necessarily the sandy soils.
No, that's definitely red clay.
Red clay. Is there one of something that you like about either one of them? You know, is there something that one wine you like what you get out of this and the other, like stylistically?
So
you
that
obviously
was
a, have an idea.
Yeah, that was the first time we ever did the Contra Costa. And again, so much of Mountain Tides has been following my curiosity more than trying to do a thing that I have in my head.
Right. So there's no winemaking plan.
There's not a strong one initially.
Here's the plan. Wing it.
Yeah. Well, it's I knew that I wanted to try it. And because Contra Costa and Clements Hills, even though they're actually pretty close to each other, have such... kind of diametrically opposed vineyard or soils. And this whole project is me kind of betting that Petite Syrah can be really interesting when it's grown in different places. And not that it's going to be the best wine in the world. I do think our wines are really good, but I just want to make wines that are truthful, you know, just are expressive of where they're grown. So we... you know, starting in 18, we only work with organic vineyards. And in the winery, we don't make any additions outside of a little bit of sulfur. Except for the rosés, I do inoculate. I haven't quite gotten the courage to go full native on those.
Come on.
I know.
Full native on rosés.
You just have to get past those aromas on day, you know, like 4 and 5. And by day 6... it'll go.
I told myself last year I was going to do it, and then I didn't. This year I'm going to try to do it again. But yeah, I thought that if I believe that Petite Syrah can be expressive of place, then I would have to believe that making, you know, kind of transparent, honest rosé that's whole cluster pressed, you know, is not. Not a Saunier, is picked for rosé. That's something that's very important to me. Yep. When it comes to the rosés that I enjoy, and that has less to do with stylistically, I think, although I do prefer the style of direct press generally, but also if you're picking red wine and then bleeding off juice, that juice was picked at an optimal time for red wine, right. And not for a wine that what I want to have in a rosé, which is a lighter, more high acid wine. And then in order to get it to that point, then you have to pull out the winemaking. You have to add the tartaric and the,
Jesus units.
Right. Yeah. So
add water,
turn water into wine.
Yep. So I,
you just really dilute your tartaric a lot before you put it in.
That's yeah. Exactly it. Right.
So I thought
10 gallons maybe, per gram.
I thought it was probable that if we made two rosés from really different places, even if we did the same thing, that they were going to end up different. And I was hoping that was the case. And it totally turned out the case. The Clements Hills is...
Yeah, they're completely different.
You know, high acid, much more mineral, I think. And which I love. And it's just a touch lower alcohol. But then the Contra Costa... I generally get much higher pHs in Contra Costa, even at lower sugar levels. So that one is a little bit softer in the mouth. Still has a ton of malic, but so it still has acidity, but it's also quite a bit more aromatically expressive. You get a lot more stone fruit quality.
There's something about the Clements Hills that now that you say it's this red dirt, it carries a little sort of, it's almost like mineral, but it's almost like an iron kind of,
for sure,
you know, which is cool. I thought it was delicious. I that's my favorite of the two.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the Contra Costa County reminds me of, you know, it has that riper fruit, you mm-hmm. know, like you say, stone fruit, you know, more on the plum side than the peach side. I mean, it's just kind of a bigger, kind of a little more opulent, yep. even though it's not in
just
a,
in, by comparison.
Right. Yeah. In comparison. Yes.
Yeah. We picked
in the 100 point rosé
21 and a half bricks.
Wow.
21 and a half bricks.
Was the Contra Costa. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a definitely.
Yeah.
Not.
I mean, they're both right at 12.9 alcohol and 12 and 12 alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the Clement Hills is only 12 alcohol.
And both of those were barrel fermented. And we did we inoculated them, but then we never did any nutrient additions or anything like that.
And Bart and Sam, have you guys ever had a Petite Sirah Rosé before? Can you remember?
Not
ever
to my memory.
One?
I mean,
my guess is there are people that we've had on the show who have rosés that have Petite Sirah in them.
Right.
But
not a solely Petite Sirah.
Not solely Petite Sirah.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that in the way back a long time ago, Fappiano, who made a lot of Petite Sirahs, they might have done a rosé of Petite Sirah. But yeah, with Saunier and sweet.
How
would
you have a freaking Petite Sirah, though?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I think what some people forget about Petite Sirah, or just plain don't know, is that Petite Sirah naturally has like great acid. And obviously it has tannin, but I think the conversation that I always heard is like, if you pick Petite Sirah any earlier than 27, 28 bricks, you're going to end up with this tannic, undrinkable wine. And thankfully that's not true, but it's also, you know, you have really great structure at, really great acid. And so you can get this freshness,
yeah.
That I think is really compelling.
At Banziger, we used to do one of the Petite Sirahs they did. It was Shell Creek. So down, you know, east of Paso Robles. And we would we'd tank ferment it, you know, on the skins mm-hmm. until it got to about 15 bricks. Then we'd press it and finish it in barrels.
For sure.
And that was our way of
Managing tannin.
And it worked pretty good. It was a beautiful wine. I don't know how it ever necessarily aged, but it sure tasted good when it was young.
And it was bottled?
It was an imagery wine. Yeah. Okay. Shell Creek Petite. So, all right. Well, let's
dig in.
Let's get into the reds.
You brought 17, 18 wines? How many we got here?
So which one do you want to start with?
We can start with the California. That's right kind here. That or the 18 Contra Costa if we have it open.
We opened everything.
Yeah, right there. I think so. That's kind of going to something a little bit lighter.
Okay, so 2018 Contra Costa County, same vineyard as the rosé.
It is not. So the
I didn't get enough rosé.
The rosé is the
it's my birthday. I'm drinking all the rosé.
I remember.
We need a second glass.
It's the Campos family vineyard in Byron. Campos. Okay. This one comes from a vineyard called the Peterson family vineyard in Knightson, and this was. We used this vineyard for we did a partial carbonic Petite Sirah this year, which is real fun, but we ran out of it in a couple weeks, unfortunately. I mean, fortunately and unfortunately.
Wasn't that what you're supposed to, with the you know.
And so this has a little bit of what ended up being the carbonic. This is kind of we got three, I called the pick at one sugar level and it came in at a much different one. You know, we tried to pick it at 23 and a half and it came in at 20 and a half.
What? How did that happen?
2018 happened.
2018 happened, and I was kind of scrambling to find a vineyard last minute, so I didn't have as much time in this vineyard, and this was a new vineyard for us this year, because another vineyard kind of, things didn't go very well, and we had to back out of the vineyard. But, so this was, it came at 20 and a half. I decided to split it up into three different fermentations. And where we did one that was like 70% whole cluster, one that was 30%, and then one that was none. And then we ended up doing another small pick a few weeks later to try and get a little bit more ripeness. And we ended up blending all of it together in some amount for this wine here. The 70% whole cluster ended up going into the carbonic mostly, which is a really fun wine.
Smells beautiful.
Thank you. So this one definitely has some of that carbonic fruit qualities.
Yeah.
I mean, here's something you just don't see a lot with Petite Syrah. 12.5 alcohol by volume. Yeah. I mean, people just don't typically do that, and it tastes and smells great. So
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the biggest problem with a lot of petite is that they are just kind of treated like a red blend wine, you know, trying to get extraction and intensity.
Well, that's why Petite Syrah used to be my favorite varietal when I was first getting into wine, because I love that I could take a bottle of Petite Syrah out to dinner, and it would taste one way at first, and then mm-hmm. and then halfway through your dinner it would start to evolve, and then it would almost transform into a dessert wine after being open for about an hour and a half, and you get all these graham cracker, marshmallow, chocolate flavors going on, where it almost became port like.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it had so many different evolutions, right, when you opened it.
And that was kind of the style of Petite Syrah, you know, yeah, then. And I mean, this is not that wine. This is
I mean, just the acidity feeling this on my on
yeah,
my
and
palate.
The liveliness. I mean, it's, yeah, I'll describe it as it has a lightness to it in the palate.
Yeah.
But not in a negative way. It's not like in a washed out way. It's not like someone added too many Jesus units. It's just, it's fresh and it's light and lively.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I my favorite wine in the world, my favorite wine region in the world, just, you know, is Beaujolais, mm-hmm. for sure. And so.
I don't think we've ever had anyone say that. Right?
I don't think so. Yeah.
That's interesting. And for a guy coming from, you know.
The Midwest,
right?
Yeah,
comes to California,
Beaujolais
makes
not some,
Petite
yeah.
Syrah,
right?
But you know, stylistically, but I understand.
So hold on a second, though. Then let's get into that a little bit. So you worked in the restaurant business, mm-hmm. Ran a wine program. Mm-hmm. So what were Beaujolais? Obviously, was something that you liked, something you learned. That was one of your wine passions. What else? What else were you kind of raised on wine?
Well, I definitely didn't grow up around any wine, because my dad was a preacher in Michigan, and we were taught that, you know, just in our greater community, that wine was evil. And
he was one of those preachers. No disrespect.
And then you came here and went, wow, they're right.
It was something that was definitely widely accepted in the community at the time, and it wasn't that it was hammered home that way. It was just, it literally didn't exist. I don't even think I saw an alcoholic beverage until I was in my teens.
Yeah, wow.
Because I went to a private Christian school. Right. My dad was a preacher at a different church, but I was pretty sheltered. And then when I moved to Louisville, Kentucky, I got a job waiting tables, and my boss was a certified sommelier, and they. Beverage director for it's an independent restaurant, but they have a few locations in Louisville. While I was there, he ended up passing his master's sum exam. Wow. And my boss would do, his name was TJ. He'd do these classes before or after work. Sometimes, you know, it's like, if you guys want to know more about wine, we'll do these short little classes. And I would go do that every chance I got just cause I wanted to sell more wine and be a better server. And instantly it just clicked, and I was like, this is something that's really interesting to me. And so I asked him for book recommendations, and I kind of went down a rabbit hole of just wanting to study about wine and wanting to try as much of it as I could. Then I ended up going on tour for a few years, and that got sidetracked a little bit. But when I decided to leave the road and get back into the restaurant business, kind of reignited the passion again. And until... I did that for 20 months on the second round, and ended up realizing that wine was definitely my passion, but not in the restaurant, mm-hmm. and that I wanted to get my hands dirty and I wanted to learn the making of it, because I definitely, that's kind of hardwired into my brain as just wanting to make things and create things that I think are beautiful. And, so that's how I ended up out here.
Sounds just like a musician, right? You know, I mean, I mean, seriously, I mean that complimentary. It's, you know, there is a connection to being able to make it, and I think musicians have a very good concept of that, because I can't make music. You know, I can try to make wine, but I can't make music. But
the way you described that is beautiful. I can't think of anything more different than Beaujolais and Petite Syrah. I mean, right?
No, that's certainly true.
That's certainly true, but you know, this first wine at least is closer to Beaujolais than
Napa Petit Sirah.
Than Napa Petit Sirah, and closer right. to Beaujolais than what a lot of people make Napa Gamay. Right. I mean, this is right. stylistically.
It's Beaujolais with tannin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which a lot of the crus actually can be fairly tannic. True. If you're in like Cherub or
right, the cru Beaujolais, which a lot of them we don't, you know, typically get to see much of.
Hard to find.
Yeah.
Except at restaurants in Louisville, apparently.
Right.
Seriously, though, what's the wine scene like in Louisville, Kentucky?
It's tough, to be honest. The bourbon industry obviously rules all, and I think they have in the past successfully stifled a lot of the other type of alcohols. And so it's really hard for us to get much, but I also, you know, was in my process of learning back then at that time, and there's a lot of stuff that was there that I didn't realize was there, of course. But there's not a great wine
culture.
Not a great wine culture, because the bourbon and cocktail culture and now the beer culture even is so strong there. They've got a lot of great craft breweries. And Louisville really is a place that, you know, Falls City beer is from Louisville, and they have a beer history as well as a bourbon history. So, and I love both of those
same ingredients,
cultures,
right?
As well.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that, craft distilling and craft beers and now White Claw are all moving in on our business.
I think we haven't tried it yet.
The summer of White Claw. It's insane.
Yeah,
it is.
How many people, real like winemakers podcast poll, how many people didn't drink as much white wine or rosé this summer because there was White Claws available?
Amanda? Van Manda?
Van Manda.
Van Manda.
Van Manda, what do you have to say for yourself?
Shit ton of White Claw.
And really, you haven't had one yet?
It's a hard seltzer, right?
It's one of these hard seltzers. I had about half of one, and I was like, that's about as much as
it started to warm up.
Exactly.
And that's the way seltzers are in general.
Yeah, but it was also like, you know, it's sugar-free alcohol, right? So how do they make the alcohol? I don't know, but once it warms up, you start to get that like a little bit of that like aspartame kind of flavor.
We were down in Orange County this summer over 4th of July and walked by a house that would have obviously been rented by a group of sorority girls.
Sponsored by White Claw.
And they were partying out in front, and they had stacks and stacks of White Claw cans. And we saw them a little bit later on that evening, you know, after the sun had gone down, and
they all had
it was not a good scene.
Or it was a great scene.
Or it was a great scene, depending on
how old you were and if you were single.
Exactly. Yeah, somebody, it was a good scene.
Maybe that's just their entry into some really fine beverage like Zima.
It's basically the same thing, right?
And that's what I said the first time I tried a White Claw. I'm like, I know that taste,
right?
And it was Zima.
Yeah, they still make Zima.
They
don't make Zima. They just took all the Zima that was still left over and put it into White Claw factory.
I mean, there was something I saw on Facebook or Instagram, and it was Fred from Scooby Doo, and you know, he'd torn the mask off the White Claw can, and underneath it was the Zima label.
That's funny.
Well, that's a great. Well, that's
this has
a
ended
nice
the
wine.
Zima White Claw podcast radio hour.
They will not be sponsors anytime soon, and that's okay with us.
Yeah. If they sponsored us, they'd probably like sponsor us, pay us in fucking White Claws.
Yeah. All you can drink.
So if we go from
next
18 Petit Sirah Contra Costa County.
Thanks for keeping us on track, Bart.
17?
Yeah, let's try the 17.
And tell us, so people that have listened to the show before, when we had Craig Harmeyer from Harmeyer Wine Cellars on the show, you're sourcing out of one of the vineyards that he's sourcing out of as
well. Yeah, so he actually hooked me up with a vineyard.
How did you meet him?
I didn't until not too long ago, but he contacted me through Instagram one day,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, "Hey, I know you make Petit Sirah. I work at this vineyard. It's one of my favorite vineyards I work with, and he's got some Petit Sirah for sale." And he was like, "Petit Sirah is definitely not my thing, so I wanted to see if you'd be interested." And at that point, I was done picking, I think, already, but or about to be done picking. And I was But I was like, you know, I'll go check it out. And I went, and it was this, you know, beautiful, organically farmed, no-till, no-spray vineyard in Borden Ranch, mm-hmm. In the town of Harold, just technically in Sacramento County. Yep. And Craig uses it in his Creshy bottling, and they've got
a, this is bad. Yeah.
Oh, is it a bad bottle?
Yeah.
Oh shit!
I was trying to.
I didn't pour it yet. I was just taking pictures of it.
I was trying to not bring it up on the radio.
But no, it's fine. It happens.
This is what happens. Show, but yeah. this is what happens. Yeah. It's just slightly off, but it's definitely off.
Yeah.
No, I want to taste it.
Yeah. But no, finish your story about Craig. Because
So he just messaged like me, carrots. And I went and looked at it, and it was great. So we
it does taste like carrots. Baby carrots.
I had a corked apple the other day. That was real gross.
Oh, that sounds awful.
And I didn't eat it, obviously, but then this morning I just found two corked pallets in our stack that I had to toss out. But
two corked pallets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like
the actual wooden pallet was corked pretty intensely.
I mean,
like intensely enough that
I picked it up and I was like, oh my God, this is corked.
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, I've totally, you walk by a stack of pallets at a large winery, you can pick that out. You know, that was one of the things at Hanzel when they, remember Hanzel had some problems with TCA in the cellar. It was like in the barrels, and they associated it to pallets. And
really?
Yeah. And what they ended up doing, they took all wood out of the cellar when they kind of shut down Hanzel for a while and rebuilt it. And one of the things that they did is they went away from wood pallets completely.
Only so what do you do?
Plastic pallets.
Plastic pallets. I had no idea.
Yep.
Huh?
Yeah. They're more expensive
because you know the fact is it's,
I think the rosé rinse is a pretty good idea.
It's,
right?
Yeah. It's wood and chlorine and.
Well, yeah. So unfortunately that 17 isn't something you want to drink, but it's normally real good.
I want that one.
I mean, we can jump to the California
rinse with the one
here.
That I like more.
I actually like the other one more, so I'm glad. We have a juxtaposing position.
That's something that happens with us a lot, where people like will be pouring for a tasting, and the rosés are almost always a 50-50 split.
Yeah,
who looks which one?
Well, you know, ironically, I think if you profiled me and Brian's palates, that you would have thought we'd landed on the opposite direction on that.
Yeah,
right. I mean, you would be more minerally acid driven.
Yes. Typically, yes.
Yeah, and I would want a little more stone fruit.
I don't know what you like. I only know what I like.
Well, I know what you like probably more than I know what I like.
Okay, so we're gonna go to the California.
So this caveat was just bottled a week and a half ago.
Ooh.
So super fresh. Fresh off the
we had a
off the bottling
bottle
line.
Shock discussion in our last episode.
Oh, there you go. This doesn't get filtered.
Minutes ago.
This doesn't get filtered or
this is the corked one, right?
Yeah, that's a corked one. So it shouldn't have too much bottle shock. We opened up a bottle last night. It was tasting real good. But this is our California blend, which is a blend of, this is the first larger SKU we've done. It's a blend of all the vineyards we work with, but again, all organic vineyards. No additions in any of these except for a little bit of sulfur, and this bottle will retail for about $20.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So again, I want to go back to,
I mean, maybe we should go back and talk pricing on the wines we've already.
Well, not just that. I want to know how you started selling the wines. Like what was, did you get hooked up with a distributor that was?
No, we self-distribute currently.
So everything's done through your website?
Through our website, we sell direct to people on the mailing list, but we also, you know, I don't have days off anymore. So I'm on set on any day that I have off from the winery at 11:11. I'm usually making sales calls, mm-hmm. or we're doing whatever we can to get the word out there about the wines.
Well, look to me like from Instagram this weekend you spent a bunch of time in vineyards.
Yeah, it's definitely vineyard time now. At this, we picked up three new vineyards for 2019. So. And they're all further away than any other vineyard we were working with.
Oh no!
Which is
you're going to be one of those guys.
How far are you going?
The furthest is probably Rorick Heritage Vineyard out in Murphy's.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we picked up Shake Ridge Ranch this year, and
good for you.
As well as a really cool biodynamic vineyard up in Redwood Valley, called Powakana Farm.
Wow.
opposite as from Amador to Redwood.
Yeah.
Valley is opposite direction.
We've got a future Morgan. Well, I mean, even Twain more Peterson than
that,
on our hands.
I don't think maybe Morgan goes that far.
Well, Hardy but he, goes that far. Yeah, Hardy goes that. Well, Hardy, I love when Hardy goes all the way up to what's the place way up north, north of Mendocino.
Oh, the land of 10,000 Buddhas, or
no, it's farther. It's even farther up there. I can't think of it. But on that note, I mean, Calaveras, then to Amador, then to.
It's a solid circuit.
Mendocino, yeah.
It's all going to be ready on the same day. You know,
I generally don't do those on the same day. Yeah, it probably will be. I'm not sure how I'm going to do it, but that's kind of been how we've done all of it.
What kind of car do you have?
I have a Chevy Bolt, an electric car, actually, which is great because I actually can do vineyard stuff in that because I get about 300 miles of range.
Oh, you get, yeah. But you're like pushing that.
Yeah, but so I'll generally when I'm doing vineyard stuff, I'll take my wife's CRV.
Okay, because you know there's places to fill up the CRV.
Yes.
In Murphy's.
I can't sit and wait for 15 hours for the Bolt to charge.
Rorick Vineyard and Shake Ridge are two that Brian and I have been talking about trying to do a road trip to go down and check those out.
Maybe I can figure out how to make the road because I've never been to Shake Ridge. I'd love to go up there.
Yeah, let me. I'll take you up to either one if you want.
Yeah, and I just want to interview Rorick just because he's such a freak.
Yeah, he's a super interesting dude. That vineyard is crazy.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful and it's so much bigger than I would have than I thought. And the aspect on all the blocks is kind of wild.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those blocks would never be planted in Sonoma or Napa counties, I think, because they're so steep. And,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you ever met Blair Guthrie?
I haven't met him, but we've messaged on Instagram a couple times.
Okay.
He found that 17 Contra Costa and really liked it and messaged me about it.
The one that we didn't get the drink.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay.
It's all good.
It's all right. We'll just talk to Blair about it.
We'll go pick up a bottle at Sonoma's Best.
Panel.
Oh, the panel.
Yeah, they're big fans of Guthrie wines.
No, I'm talking about Mountain Tides.
Oh, yeah.
The guest we have on today. Right.
Yeah, sorry.
The show we're currently doing.
That was the first time I was exposed to Guthrie wines was at the panel, and it was walking in, and the it was the mom and the daughter there, and the mom said, "Oh, this is a really good wine. You should try." And it was the Petite Syrah. Yeah. And it was very different from Petite Syrah that I had before.
Yeah, I think we probably have real similar views on a lot of the winemaking stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. We've talked about hooking up and swapping bottles sometimes, and we just haven't made it happen yet, unfortunately.
Yeah. Busy making and selling wine.
Yeah.
Right.
It does take up a lot of time, but...
What's your favorite tasting room to go to? Yeah. Unless I went to a tasting room. Go to my tasting room all the time. Not my favorite tasting room to go to anymore.
That's why we do podcasts, so that way the people bring the wines to us.
Yeah, exactly.
But you keep adding SKUs, so you keep adding different vineyard designates, so you must be selling wine.
We're doing pretty well. You know,
how many cases total are we?
Yeah, I was gonna say when you said we also do like this is a big number for us.
California we did right about 400 cases, which is pretty huge for us. We've traditionally only done 50 to 75 cases of any other SKU.
Right.
We've sold out of most of the first wines the first couple of years that we released. We've got a little bit left of the 17 Reds, but I've got like 8 cases of the Clements and 25 cases of the Contra Costa. So we've been doing quite well. But we're also growing, and people are starting to hear about us for the first time. And
how much is going through the website, and how much are you out hand selling?
It was a lot more in the beginning through the site, but I think right now we're probably about 50-50.
Yeah, good.
We've got some real good accounts that have been super supportive, like Todd down at Sonoma's Best, and like Bay Grape down in Oakland has been super supportive of us. And
shout out to Stevie and Josiah.
Yeah, they're the best. They're some of my favorite people in this entire industry. And then like Miracle Plum up in Santa Rosa have also been real kind.
Wait,
to us.
Where is that?
Miracle
I just
Plum.
Heard about Miracle Plum.
They're it's Gwen and Sally, these two awesome ladies who opened up it's kind of wine shop, culinary goods.
It looks really, really awesome.
Is it a Luther Burbank reference with Miracle Plum?
It must be some point to that. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Santa Rosa.
Yeah, and where it's located.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Wait, where is this place? We need to...
Hold on, I'm finding it. Go ahead.
We spend a fair amount of time at Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
And
it's actually, they have a temporary restraining order from going to Bottle Barn. Not from the people at Bottle Barn, but from their credit card companies.
Right, yeah, and our wives.
Yeah.
I love Bottle Barn. We haven't gotten into there yet, but... But we're all the time we're finding new spots and trying to get the wine out there. Really, we're just trying to get people to know that we exist.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the labels catch people's eyes, and I think in wine shops the wines tend to do real well because people can see the labels.
Right.
And my wife.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The labels, because all the labels, we should for the radio audience. The logo is. The mountain and the tides. It's a gold pyramid with like waves underneath it, right? And so that's on the front of the bottle. If you see this on the shelf, all you see is that logo and then superimposed over a bunch of different photographs.
Yeah, so my wife's a photographer by trade. So these are all photographs of hers. Then she was making the logo, and she was like, "I just don't know. This seems a little bit like it looks like a cult." And I was like, "Exactly,
it does. It does.
Totally does." And I'll tell you what, the reason why I wanted to have you on this is because I've spent a little bit of time down at Todd's, and I sit at the bar.
You spend most of your time down at Todd's.
Come on, now.
Occasionally, he podcasts, and he's a winemaker, so every once in a while, he makes wine.
I could be found at Enoteca della Santina or the Fig or whatever. But
sometimes on the front porch.
Anywhere that has Pliny on tap.
Yeah.
I got it. There's a funny story about the porch at 16600. I'll tell you off air. Off air. But at
Todd's.
You
the one left the cans of Modelo on there the other night?
No. So, but when you're sitting at Todd's and he's got the bottles up on the top of the shelf, and I look at him and I go, "It's such a cool photo. And what is that pyramid all about?" And it's like it draws you in. It's like, what does it mean? Why do I want to reach for it?
Yes.
It totally works.
Yes, my wife's name is Allison Watkins. So she designs all of our bottles, and she's she is definitely a badass at everything she does.
This is what you're doing to save yourself, because you've told twice now the story about how your wife didn't think it was a good idea and you said it was and it turns out it was.
She will readily admit to being a little nervous about it being a little too modern. And she's like, "These don't look like traditional wine labels at all." And I was very confident, and I wanted something that didn't look traditional. And
so I probably see a lot of traditional wine labels that you apply in a bottling tracks.
Yeah, absolutely. On a daily basis, right? We're a new brand that nobody knows about. And if we've got to look a little bit different than everybody, if we're going to get even a second glance.
Well, and I think that is the trend. And, If I refer to all the wineries that I want to be next to on a shelf or, be on the same list with, I call them, I want to be on with the cool kids. And there's no doubt that the trend now is to a label that's not as traditional. I mean, sure, there are traditional labels, but that aren't traditional that draw you in and make you take a secondary look at it. And that's my point too. When I sit and look at your label, it makes me look at it over and over and over again.
Good, yeah.
Your Insta is at Mountain Tides Wine Co. or Mountain Tides?
Just Mountain Tides.
Wine. Just Mountain Tides.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Beautiful. All right, let's go to the next wine.
Yeah. So that was the California.
All of a sudden, Allison's going to have a bunch of three new people following her on Instagram.
All right. She deserves it. I would say next we should do the.
How did you guys meet, by the way? Was it back home or out here?
We met out here, so very old fashioned way, on the internet.
Yeah, baby.
Wait a minute, you swiped left?
It wasn't Tinder. It was. It wasn't classy necessarily, though.
wait. There's a classy online dating app?
I'm sure there's some. I know. I like to joke around that I wanted. To meet the love of my life, I just didn't want to have to pay for it. So it was a free site called.
Heard that.
Yeah.
You know what?
Okay, Cupid is where we met.
I think you guys know this. I met my wife, Terry. We met on a dating site.
And, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we did on match.com. And so this was back in 2000. And so
it was like the dating site. It wasn't a dating site.
It was the dating site. And a matter of fact, we lied to our friends how we met. We said we met at a wine tasting because at that point, the only dating sites were like, you know, they were like internet sex sites and stuff. And
right.
So we just didn't
small print in the back of the newspaper, right, weekly newspapers. Right.
So we didn't tell anybody for the longest time how we met. But yeah, we met on Match.com.
Yeah, no, I had just moved to the area and didn't know anybody. And I lived in the basement of my boss's house.
Oh, yeah, creepy as fuck.
He was the only one that, yeah, it was just him and I working together. And I didn't really have any money.
Yeah.
And so it's not like I can go out and meet people too many ways. And so I was just looking really just to make some friends and meet some people. And I just had the thought, you know, I like to think I'm a pretty okay guy,
right,
just wanting to meet somebody who's cool. And if it turns into something else, that'd be great. And I have to believe that I'm not the only person out there in the world who thinks that way. And, so I tried it out and it worked out.
I mean, for me, it was...
And you got a label designer out of right, it. I mean, exactly. A wife out of it.
For me, the amazing thing was is that you know, you live in Sonoma. People would say, well, you're single in Sonoma. Don't you meet women at the winery? And it's like, no, because they're there with their friends. You know, it's not like you, like...
Sweaty and covered in grape pumice. Right. Had a barrel of Petite Sirah explode at me 20 minutes ago. My face is stained purple. Yeah. How's it going? Can I get your number?
And everybody else in Sonoma, you probably know, or somebody knows that they know someone you know. So right. Meeting someone... it's not that easy, you know, in these smaller areas. So to me, online dating was like a breath of fresh air.
Perfect.
Yeah,
I was freshener before you go on that date.
I was definitely lucky to also, yeah, to meet somebody not in the industry, you know, having somebody who wasn't, you know, it's a small world and sometimes it gets a little too small.
Yeah. But someone who enjoyed wine.
Yeah, she didn't like wine a lot at the time. I think awesome. She probably had some, you know, some not great wine along the way, and she definitely has, I think, a little bit of a histamine allergy that she gets with red wine sometimes. But
I've heard that recently.
We're gonna have to talk about that on the podcast.
Don't spread that rumor.
Yeah.
But she definitely drinks more wine now. That's been kind of one of the best things about Mountain Tides is obviously we collaborate in life and that's really wonderful. But being able to collaborate on this project, because we're both artists, you know, by nature, and being able to do this thing together in a way where we both get to bring something to the table and do a thing that we couldn't do without the other person has been really rewarding and truly, truly a wonderful experience.
That's awesome. But all right.
You should do this one next.
Okay.
But by the way, I love this wine.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this. The Petite Sirah is obviously a hard sell in a lot of places, particularly in restaurants. And so I really wanted to have a wine that I could have afforded when I was trying to learn about wine, but also a wine that could end up as a glass pour.
And right. So these are priced that they could be by the glass pours at a lot of restaurants, right?
Yeah. So the rosés are like 22 and 23 mm-hmm. retail. The California will be about 20 when it comes out next month. Mm. The reds are like 32, 34.
Mm-hmm.
This one is our first vineyard designate is going to be 36, but.
And then would you consider Petite Sirah as a Rhone varietal yourself?
It's a tricky question. I
want to get this out there.
Is there Petite Sirah on the menu at the Girl and the Fig?
No, but Vicky Carroll, who runs Hospice de Rhone, seems to say that.
I didn't see it.
It's acceptable. Now at this point with HDR.
Well, but what is the Rhone name for it? The alternative name to Petite Sirah is
Durif.
Yeah. Or Durif.
Yeah.
So is that on the
yeah. Okay, I mean that's the question. Rhone? Can you put Petite Sirah in a bottle that is like a Cote de Rhone? That like an appellated Rhone Valley wine?
Do they have any growing there?
Very little, yeah. If any. I know of one winery that contacted me that said they're really trying to bring it back, and they're doing a bunch of petite sirah plantings.
So, but could you, if it is growing there, could you?
Right. Is it on the list?
Is it on the list?
It's on the list here, but there, I don't know.
Right.
I couldn't. Yeah. That's something worth looking into.
So I think of it more of as a Bordeaux varietal, but that's just because it's blended in Cabernet so much here, I guess.
Well, huh. I think it's parentage, you know, with Syrah as the male parent and Pellerson as the female parent.
Wait, say that again. As the female, what?
Pellerson.
Pellerson
is I believe it's an Alpine variety. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't think there's anybody here who's going to correct you.
No. Nope.
Dr. Francois
you're on your own limb on this one, man.
Uh-huh. You know,
but if Morgan wants to call in and correct you.
He certainly can. I'm open to correction and chastisement, certainly. But
you work in the wine industry. Yeah. You have no choice.
But there's a French scientist that successfully pollinated Pellerson with Syrah back in, I think, like 1854, and obviously I'm probably off on dates, but
sounds good though.
Found it to have smaller berries, be hardier, and I think really to me Petit Syrah, I don't think of it in the context of the Rhone Valley, even though Syrah is where, you know, is the parent grape of it, which is clearly a Rhone variety, but I think of it as really truly a California grape. Because it has thrived here as far back as, I think, like the 1870s when 1880s when it started getting planted here, and possibly even a little bit before that. You know, there's probably 20 grapes that were called Petit Syrah until the mid 20th century. And
Bart's been Googling.
Well, I was just gonna say on the Hospice de Rhone list, it is not listed as one of them.
But it's on the back of your shirt, Bart. Isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. That's why I asked. That's
I don't know.
You turned around too fast, and we
just assumed
because
you turned around that it was on there.
No.
We weren't actually reading.
I'm just going to leave that right there.
And if we could read, right. We'd be doing something
else.
We both
went to Sonoma County Public Schools.
We all went to Sonoma County Public Schools.
I didn't. I went to a private school in Michigan.
Right.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
But not one known for its academics.
Known for keeping kids away from wine.
Yeah.
So is this too personal of a question?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Moving on.
Whatever it is.
I mean, you grew up in a family where wine was frowned upon at the very least.
Correct. Yeah.
Now you make wine for a living.
Yep.
How's that go? What do you drink at Thanksgiving?
I think that's a
great
question.
Under the table.
Yeah. When did you come out?
It's been a journey for me and my family. And thankfully I have, you know, I think the greatest family in the world that loves me enough to have listened to me and they started asking me a lot of questions. You know, my parents were, you know, asking why is wine important to you? Why are you doing this? You know, 'cause I changed my life and gave up everything I had and moved out to California with $30 in my bank account.
Wow.
And
that's enough. It's enough money to start a winery.
and so I had to, you know, be real honest about it. It's like, you know, wine is really important to me, and I know I'm kind of throwing all of this other stability away for it, but it's very compelling to me for these reasons. And my parents really listened to me, and you know, I had a lot of different conversations with them, and they're super supportive of it. And they've been out here, check things out. I think when my mom first visited the winery for the first time, it really clicked for her, and she's like, "Oh, I get it now." She's like, "This is an art," and she's like, "It makes so much more sense to me. You're not just making this thoughtless alcohol." She's like, "This is a powerful thing that really means a lot to you." And she's like, "And so now it means a lot to me." And there's a couple members of my family that will have a glass of wine every now and again, which is pretty thrilling for me. But even if they don't, they all generally still buy wine from us just because they're proud of us. And nice. And they think it's a cool thing that we've followed things that we're passionate about.
So they haven't quite gone from zero to Mountain Tides Petit Syrah in your father's congregation.
Well, my father's not a preacher anymore.
Okay.
But he actually is. He is a minister in his church now, which is not the church I grew up in, but He's just happy that I'm doing something I love, and he's willing to support that.
Cool. It's the fruit of the vine.
My dad was preaching in a church in Detroit the weekend before I moved to California, and he's like, come with me to the church, and afterward we'll go see the Tigers. I'm a big Tigers fan, and so I was like, I'll just sit in the back pew and hang out while my dad does his thing, and then before
for places to stay when you move to Napa.
Yeah, no. So when, but then the pastor of the church ended up finding out I was coming and ended up having me sit on stage with him. And then the pastor at the end of the service, you know, said, I just want to take some time out to pray for our brother Scott, who's getting ready to move to California to make some wine. And then he started quoting a lot of Bible verses and he said Scott's moving out to California to do God's work. Wow. And my dad turned to me and he's like, I've never really thought about it like that. And that was actually a pretty powerful moment for me.
Yeah. Wow. I'm having a whole Footloose flashback right now.
No, I mean, seriously though, wine is everywhere in the Bible.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we joke about Jesus units, but you know, is that the first miracle?
It was
the first miracle. Look,
the wedding at Cana.
Jewish guy, went to Catholic school for a year and a half. I can I can say a little bit.
I remember your prayer.
You know, but the thing about it is, wine has a place different than alcohols. You know, between spirits and beer, because it does have ritual purposes, you know, in lots of religion, you know, and it's the fruit of the vine. If it wasn't for wine, wine and beer, where all that religion comes from, there would have been no civilization there. So it's God's work.
Yeah,
God's work making Petit Sirah drinkable.
Yeah. Fuck, man.
The fourth miracle. Sorry.
Can I use that on the website?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
perfect.
That you should. And, when
your dad gets mad at you, you can just blame me.
Yeah. No. Blame some hippie from Sonoma.
He was wearing tie dye, Dad. I couldn't say no.
That's awesome. All right. Tell me what's up next on the lineup.
So this is our Clements Hills Petit Sirah. So southeastern corner of Lodi, around the town of Lockeford. This is grown by a really cool family.
Do you always stop at the Lockeford?
Lockeford meat Meats. I would if I had my way, but we don't. We actually don't eat a ton of meat at our house, so.
Okay. That's why you had to make lighter style Petit Sirah.
Honestly, if I did, I would just, you can't. Maybe you can live off of sausages, but it's probably not going to end well for you.
They're so good. I've only had them one time, but they're so good.
The last time I was there, I bought like
what
30
sausage?
Different sausages.
No,
basically, it's like every, you know,
like you've only had sausage one time.
Out of every three Tegan Pasalacqua Instagram posts, one is at the Green Door in Napa, one is in a vineyard, and then the third one is at Lockford Meats.
Well, and the fourth one is
No Place. That's what it is. Right, No Place. Right.
Yeah. But yeah, Lockford Meats is incredible. The last time I was there, I think I spent $50 on sausages, and that can't happen too many times.
Right.
Wait, but it sounds like you guys are in a vegan household.
We cook vegan. My wife cooks vegan most of the time.
Plant-based.
Yeah.
Lifestyle.
It's not something where she adheres to it more than I do. I have my moments going in and out of it, but we both spend a lot of time as vegetarians throughout our lives, and just try to make good decisions. And also environmentally, I think vegan tends to adhere a little bit closer to, you know, we're trying to cut a lot of things out of our life that isn't good for the earth as much as we can. And that's one thing I think we can do to be a little bit better all the time personally for us. You know?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about corks.
Yeah, sure.
That's why we ate all the cheese and salami before you got here.
Yeah, no.
Not just because.
Yeah, that's why.
No, and we love meat. It's just we And cheese, obviously, we try to just save it more for special occasions.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. It's all good.
Yeah, so what are you doing with your cork program?
So we just switched corks, cork suppliers. We do use natural corks. That we were working with M.A. Silva. Now we're working with Amarim. And
are they Enditech? Are they the...
No, they're just the standard. Okay. We use a different cork for the California blend just because it's a cheaper bottle, but we're using, the, I think, the 20s. For the California blend and the 10s for the other wines. Now we just switched cork and glass. The glass we moved to an American manufacturer.
Nice.
It's using a lot of recycled content, and
it
also
looks like a slightly smaller bottle.
Yeah, it's a smaller, much lighter bottle, which is again another thing that we're just trying to do our part a little bit. A lighter bottle is.
Well, will you explain that?
Well, yeah, the heavier the bottle. Obviously, the more fuel it's going to take to ship it because it's heavy. And so going with a lighter bottle, it's not going to change the world on our own, but I think it, you know, just cutting back little by little of trying to do things a little bit better all the time is the only way we're going to get anywhere when it comes to helping the earth out.
Yeah, and for the listeners out there, so you know, wine bottles usually just kind of came in one. There was like one choice. It was a Burgundy bottle or Bordeaux bottle or a Hock bottle. And the size of the bottle was all, for the most part, pretty similar.
Yep.
In the last 10, 15 years, with wineries trying to make their bottles stand out on shelves and give the impression of quality and justifying some of the prices, they've gotten bigger and thicker and darker and heavier.
Taller.
Sometimes they don't even fit in wine racks. Sometimes you pick up the bottle and you think there's still half a bottle of wine in it, and it's empty.
Right. And that's a joke for the people that work on the floor at restaurants. Usually you say, oh, the heavier the bottle, the more expensive it's going to be. But people tend to think that that's the quality is better on a bottle of wine where the glass is super heavy.
But the fact is that that's changing, and a lot of wineries, and especially a lot of young, newer wineries, are going back to just kind of the traditional wine.
I like to call them woke wineries.
Woke?
Yeah.
Since when?
Go ahead.
That was something I came up with today.
So are you going to explain it?
Woke.
You know.
Right. Screw the people that are saying that I need this heavy glass to make it seem like my wine is better.
Right.
Why don't we do something that's good for the environment? And why don't you try the wine and you decide whether it's good or not?
And that's all tempered with the fact that we're still, you know, making wine, which is not, you know, we're using a lot of, in the industry in general, you know, using a bunch of glass and stuff like that isn't necessarily the best thing in the world. But
I'm trying to figure out how we use less shrink wrap.
Me too.
Like, if we can figure out a way to not have to get wine when the glass comes in for bottling that much shrink wrap and then send it out with shrink wrap,
yeah,
that would make a huge difference.
Fishing sure. line.
Well, I mean, there's fishing tying twine, and tying twine works okay, but it's still, yeah, it's either plastic based, or if you use actual twine, it's more expensive. And but yeah, if we could get rid of shrink wrap, man,
yeah, for
that'd
sure.
be awesome.
And the... You know, there's a lot of water waste, obviously, in wineries. We try to cut back on that a little bit with ours, not just for that, but also some stylistic decisions of we don't generally rack our wines until right before bottling.
You're a no foil guy.
No foil.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah. They just don't make for us especially, they don't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Me neither. No comment on anybody else's decisions, but.
We're fully foilless at this table.
Yeah. Yeah, Sam and I don't use them, and Brian would prefer that nobody used them.
No, ever.
Yeah. And some of that might be from me working in restaurants and hating taking off foils
at
a table.
And wax.
Yeah.
But don't look at me like that. My wax is not the hard wax.
No, your wax is totally workable.
Yeah, I'm okay with any wax as long as it's not the hard shell stuff.
Yeah, right. And the way Sam does it with just the dop on top, and you can put your...
The dop on top.
The dop on top. That's my
technical term.
That's my fake Instagram account.
See, that sounds like a line from one of Dane's rap songs that he's into.
Well, and it made sense to me after Sam explained the reason for doing it, so that it, you know, when people are putting their wines in their wine fridge or their cellar at home, that it kind of stands out when you've got that little red dollop of wax or whatever. That makes
the target. It's the one that goes, I'm gonna drink that one tonight.
Yeah, because at first I didn't get it.
When we print on our corks, so we've got the logo on the outside of the cork, so you can see that in your wine fridge.
Right.
But yeah, so this wine is our.
I'm drinking. I'm way ahead of you.
2017 Clements Hills.
Oh no, I'm still talking about.
In the town of Lockford, but this is really cool vineyard. Same vineyard as the rosé, so red clay vineyard. Generally, I was warned initially that the tannins were going to be out of control, but we're pretty gentle with it, and we tend to not have too many issues with tannin. But the acid and pH is always kind of right where we want it, right. even at a little bit of a lower.
The color is beautiful.
Thank you.
The color on all the wines are just beautiful.
That's one thing you don't have to work too hard with Petit Sirah on.
No, well, except in rosé, you got to at least watch it, right?
Yeah.
Although with you picking it, you know, for rosé, and at those sugars, the color, a lot of times the color just hasn't even started to kick in yet.
Yeah, and we don't. I don't think about color too often in the winemaking process, and for rosé, I'm worried more about pH rising if we're pressing too hard. But I don't think of color as much of a signifier of quality as aromatics and texture. That's what I'm much more interested in. And then the color is just whatever we get will be what it is eventually.
You're making Petit Sirah, you shouldn't have to worry about color.
It makes it easy, easier. If I was making Grenache or something else, I might think about it a little bit more. But so this one is our... another one we just bottled about a week and a half ago. This is our first.
This is my favorite of the labels.
This is our first vineyard designate.
You can tell Allison.
Thank you. Yeah. So this one, that's a photo in the vineyard.
That's kind of what I figured.
Something we're gonna, I think, try to do for our vineyard designates.
And it's blackberries growing up into the vines. Is that what Is that what it is?
Yeah. So it's under the vine, blackberries and a buckeye butterfly. So this is the Palmero family vineyard. It's that vineyard we were talking about that Craig turned me on to.
Okay.
This is our first year working with this fruit, and it's just a kind of a special place. It has a different quality to it than any other Petit Sirah I'd ever made or tasted to that point. So it's like, we've got to set this aside and do something special with it.
A little dustiness.
So I did just notice that on the pyramid, on the insignia, there is a slight little line at the top.
Yeah.
I saw that on the embroidery. I thought it was like a...
Yeah, I just checked all the labels to make sure they all have it. Is that relevant?
So it's kind of just a little bit of a graphic signature that it's a mountain and not just a triangle, I think. Giving a two-dimensional thing, trying to give it a little bit of a third dimension.
So it's like a ridge line in front of the other ridge line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I dig it. But, it's a cool package.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All props go to Allison.
Next time bring Allison to the podcast.
I try. Today's the first day of... She teaches at Napa College. Today's the first day back to school, so she's pretty busy today.
Back. When's Dane go back?
Bart and I had to drop our kids off today for the first day, yep.
That's why Farmer's Market was such a shit show last night. It was everybody's, like, last hurrah. There was people out in the middle of the plaza until, like, 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Mike the Baker said he didn't even call that Farmer's Market anymore.
No, that's not really. No. It's once Tuesday, he stopped going,
City Party.
Yeah, it's Tuesday Market.
City Party. Yeah.
Well, there is no farmers there anymore. And, you know, like Mike the Baker said, there's, like, 20 food vendors now. And,
right.
We went last night for the first time in Dane's lifetime, and we'll probably never not be able to go again because he's got the taste of like hanging on the plaza with his friend.
Never not be able to go again. Wait, does that mean you're going or you're not?
We're gonna go to every other.
We'll have to keep going. We'll never
keep going and keep the digital leash.
Able to go. Never mind, Brian.
Brian, have another glass of rosé. Day two, episode two of Brian's birthday. Is it time for cupcakes yet?
No, not till late. Very late tonight.
All right, let's not wax over this last wine.
Okay. So, should we talk about the last? Does that mean?
Well, no, just does that mean? A little more about where the vineyard was. I'm sorry. I felt like we were interrupting. We got distracted.
This is 10% off danesellers.com if you listen to this far.
Yeah, so this is Palmero Family Vineyard, Borden Ranch, AVA, in the town of Harold, California. Not a super well-known area.
So where is that in? What county is that in?
That's technically in Sacramento County.
Oh, this is the one. This is the one that you share
with Craig Harmeyer. So he gets the Chenin, and I get Petit Syrah. I buy everything except for I think like two rows, which some people buy in Sacramento, and they've been buying it for like 15 to 20 years or something like that. But it was originally planted in 81 by this guy Gerald Cresci, which is why Craig calls it his Cresci bottle, who's a kind of well-known Lodi grower over the years, and he passed away a few years ago, unfortunately. But and he was about, I think he was 92 when he passed away, and farmed it up until the day he passed away by himself. But the just a really beautiful property that is taken care of by Gary and Melody Palmero, who bought it from the Cresci family, and I got to know them, and they're learning their way through the farming, and but also trying to honor what Gerald was doing. And
so were they not grape growers before buying it?
They were. Gary was doing a lot of home winemaking and wanted to get more and more involved, and that's how he knew Craig, was through the San Francisco or Sacramento Home Winemakers club, which is a pretty big organization. So Craig called me, messaged me, and was like, "Hey, I've got this Petit Syrah if you're interested." And I couldn't turn it down once I went out there. It has a little bit more. This one, like I said, I try to make Petit Syrah a little bit lighter, but I'm not going to do that at risk of not listening to a vineyard.
Right.
So this one, I was checking sugars where I'd normally pick in the 23 to 24 range, and we were still like at 3.2, 3.3 pH. So it's like, gotta let it ride just a little bit longer. And we did end up doing 50% whole cluster on this one. Which I think you get a little bit of the more depth of fruit flavor. It obviously has lots of dark fruit, but also has a little bit of a brighter fruit as well. And then a little bit of like a mint eucalyptus that we don't get in any of our other vineyards.
I mean, I think part of the thing about Petit Syrah is that if you wait too long or you work it too hard, it, like Syrah, can become swampy. It can, overpower. It can be kind of single-minded. And by doing the whole cluster, adds another dimension without a doubt.
For sure.
Which really helps.
Yeah, and it you can't do it. I did it with a lot of our vineyards last year. I'm going to do it with fewer this year.
Yeah.
Kind of see what reacted better than other.
Right.
But again,
it's always kind of a moving target. Isn't
it? And it's a, so it's always a small sample size no matter what you do.
Right.
So you've got to, trust your instincts and I'm not a big numbers guy when it comes to chemistries. I'll, run a juice panel, but it's not going to generally change the way I do anything.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't it be great to have five different tanks that you could do five different amounts? But when you make wine at the levels that we all make wines at, you just don't have that opportunity.
No. So I do all of my fermentations for the reds in open top bins.
Yeah.
Part of that is, a lot of that is just logistics.
Yeah.
You can have all the passion you want, but you still got to go through the logistics of how to make everything happen. And I don't think that takes away from the romance of it. I think it just means you have to be that much more passionate to really make it happen when it's not easy to do this kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, when you don't have the ability just to know that the tank is going to be at the temperature you want it to be because it's hooked up to a computer.
Yeah.
And you have to actually be aware of it and be putting your hands in it and seeing where it's at and monitoring the temperature, moving it out in the sun, moving it out of the sun, whichever it is.
I love being able to physically interact with our fermentations. Right. Yeah. My hands are up to my elbows are generally stained pretty red during harvest.
Yeah. 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 It's the best part of harvest.
Yeah. I think so too.
Your hands start to crack. hurts to touch anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a little bitch, but yeah, when I came back from Paso Robles, after opening up 530 wines in 3 days,
yeah,
my fingers and thumbs were cracked and filled with red wine. It took, I think, about 4 days to get the color out of it.
When are you making wine this year, man?
Which I've seen Bart's hands look like that pretty much every harvest, yeah. But I had never experienced that before.
And it's interesting because the cracks, no matter how much hand lotion you put on, you can't, if you get behind, you never make it up.
You know what I found out?
And citric acid really hurts.
Carmex.
Right.
I finally got some, because I was putting Carmex on my lips and I was driving one day and I'm like, oh, you know what? Let me put it on my fingers. Worked like a dream. Yeah.
This episode of the podcast has been brought to you by Carmex.
Carmex. You can buy it in a small tube or in a jar.
And it's not just regular petroleum jelly, but the like medicated one.
Yeah.
But I'll have to put like socks on my hands at night.
Right. Yeah.
And put that stuff on my hand and just soak my hands in it overnight.
Yep.
It was my first harvest. My fingerprints started to separate.
Holy shit.
And, because you get so dried out and they just open up, and I didn't know that was a thing that could happen, but it definitely can when your hands are in high acid environments.
Happens to me at Dead Shows. Sorry. I know your parents are gonna listen to this episode. I really shouldn't be more careful.
Look out for the liquid sunshine.
my dad used to be a radio DJ before he became a preacher. All
right, fair enough.
Wow.
Or not, did we run through the entire
thing? I think we did everything.
I think we did.
So we saved one wine from the last episode.
Right.
Of the Villa Creek. We got a little Chris Cherry Grenache based wine, because we do want to mention that Grenache Day is coming up. And,
September 20th is Grenache Day, third Friday in September. And then Grenache Day at the Tasting House, Winery 16600 Vinyl Sunday is Sunday the 22nd, with the Fig Rig doing duck confit tacos and pulled pork tacos.
Yes.
Clifford Brown the Third and Clifford Brown Jr. coming back with live music and spoken word and the whole deal that they did. And we can probably have a keg or two of rosé left that we'll tap and have a Grenache Day party.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's at the Tasting House, 2 to 5 in the afternoon.
And how do people, if they're not wine club members, how do they get access to that?
They become wine club members first.
And if they're...
No, it's open to the public. It's great if you call ahead and RSVP. You can pay ahead of time. You can also just pay at the door. It's our regular tasting fee cost. It'll be a lineup of both some new releases and some library Grenache and Grenache-based wines and food, round of tacos, all for $35.
Wait, so people pay for coming to Vinyl Sunday, then they don't have to pay at the food truck?
Well, the way I did it with... Because sometimes, basically, the food truck, the Fig Rig is expensive. So I don't buy all the food of the food from the... But when you buy a tasting, you get a ticket for... like two tacos and some french fries or something.
Right. Okay. So if you want more, you go back and you can buy yourself
some more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Can you pass that Villa Creek over here?
And kids eat free. If you bring kids, we'll give them tickets.
I'm
so
a
then
kid.
You can steal your kids' food.
What do you consider a kid?
Not drinking wine.
Okay. It's anyone under 21.
Makes sense.
Thank you, sir.
And that's it for Grenache Day this year, right? I mean, it doesn't sound like we have a local.
Yeah, we were.
Sandra's out of town. She's taken off for most of September.
The queen of Grenache is out of town.
Yeah, if you happen to listen to The Bite Goes On, we have been bulking up on episodes just so she can go on vacation for September. So, and I will be working. I'll actually be at Vinyl Sunday because I will be literally working.
You will be working for your water.
Yeah, Jasmine is taking off for the entire month, so I will be doing doubles.
Come hang out at the
almost
tasting
every day for September, working at the tasting house and then going to Sante. So, I'll be tired as hell by October.
By the time your grapes are ripe.
Sounds like we need to record some episodes also.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. If you want to be on that podcast, let us know. We'll be recording next
week.
Or
just come to the tasting house. I'll be there. We can get Paul on to do the intro. Hi.
Hi. The high energy intro with Paul.
Welcome.
To
the winemakers.
All right, guys. 10% off. 10% off.
Right. If you're still listening. Right.
Let's say we've got a release coming up next month. If anybody's interested, just you can go to our website.
Oh, right. Yes, sell your wine. That's what you're here for.
www.mountaintideswine.com. You can sign up for our mailing list. We have some perks for the mailing list, and that's the only way to buy through the website is by signing up for our mailing list, because we'll send out a password for the web store.
Okay, so there's no wine club, but you do how many releases a year?
There is a wine club coming in a couple weeks.
Okay.
We're going to do our first wine club.
By the time this show comes out, it's going to be the initial release. So
yeah, it should be. And then we'll do the actual big release, I think about September 15th-ish. The wine club is going to go out to the mailing list in a couple weeks. But we do two releases a year generally. One in April and one in September.
Okay.
Got to... make money for harvest and also
grapes.
And yeah. Also be able to times when you can't ship 12 months of the year,
right?
Just because it gets too hot during the summertime, so that gives us some time where we can actually send wine out without worrying about that.
And are you at this point, you have no place to do tastings or anything?
Not really. No, I can do some one-off things of showing people around the winery.
Sure.
At 1111, which people should definitely come check out. 1111. We make a lot of great Napa wines. It's at 1111wines.com. You can book a tasting. But we don't really have our own space yet.
Right. But if someone that maybe had listened to the show was coming to visit and showed some interest, you wouldn't mind hearing from them?
Not at all. Please get a hold of me. You can do that through the website or just scott@mountaintideswine.com.
Yeah. Or I guess you're on Instagram.
We are on Instagram @mountaintides.
Yep. Twitter, Facebook.
I do Twitter. My wife doesn't. Yep. The Twitter is Cellarine Scott.
Yep.
And that is also my personal Instagram. But you can check out, my wife is Allison Watkins. She's on Instagram as well. She's got a lot of beautiful photos there.
What about any places that are pouring the wine by the glass here in the North Coast, that if people are in the area could go and try?
Yeah, so we've got we're doing an event at Miracle Plum this weekend, but obviously this won't come out before then.
Yeah.
But we're doing a pasta making class and preparing petite sirahs.
Oh, with Allie and Alex.
Yep.
All right. Nice.
And then on the 22nd we'll be at Mission Cheese in San Francisco doing cheese and wine pairings for petite sirah. On the 23rd, we're doing the 5th anniversary party for Bay Grape in Oakland. We're pouring out of magnums, which will be fun. And then...
Wait, how many magnums are you doing?
We did some in 2017. Mm-hmm. We made 5 cases of magnums between the 2 wines. It wasn't a lot, but they're doing a big bottle party. So we're pouring our 2017 Contra Costa out of magnums, which will be a lot of fun. That also probably will have happened by the time this comes out, but... maybe not.
I have to look at what.
Well, if you're listening, they just did a bunch of great events that you should get on the list so you can get to the next year.
We've got there's always more fun stuff coming up. Obviously, harvest will kind of be hunkered down, picking fruit and making wine.
How many all told? 1111 custom crush. How many tons do you think you'll bring in?
Last year we were really low, and so it was only supposed to be about 350, but then we ended up doing 550 this year.
The story of 2018.
Yeah. This year we're looking at more like 450. So I would imagine it's going to be about 5 to 550 again,
or
which will be split between, 140 to 160 different fermentations.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a lot to manage, but it's never boring.
Yeah.
And I posted on Instagram on our, winemakers pod that we were here with Mountain Tides, and Craig Harmeyer gave us a little like out there.
Oh, cool.
And the Bay Grape, this will come out just before the Bay Grape.
Oh,
so
cool.
Anyone listening, if you're not doing anything on the 25th, 24th, 25th, You can check out Bay Grape in
Oakland.
I think
it might be the 23rd. I might be getting my dates wrong, but
23rd is Friday. That's when this comes out.
Okay.
So
the it's in that weekend somewhere in there.
Yeah. But, so there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be more stuff coming.
Yeah.
But we'll release the new wines, the three new wines, as well as what we have left of the little that we have left of the rosés and the 17 reds will be available to the mailing list in around September 15th. So sign up for that mailing list.
Nice. Go ahead and run it all down. Give us a website, email, whatever you want.
Website again, www.mountaintideswine.com. Scott@mountaintideswine.com is my email. And we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram @mountaintides, and we'd love to hear from you if you're interested.
All right, Sam has officially left the building. I just want to say, you know what, you do not have to be a fan of Petite Sirah to love these wines, which I think maybe 10 years ago wasn't the case.
Right.
I think people are starting to expand out and do some different expressions. And I think if you're just a wine lover, you'll love these wines.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that Petite Sirah had, as you said, it's hard to sell, on restaurants and stuff. And that's because of what it was. It's not what it is becoming. And there's no doubt, Bialy does some Petite Sirahs that are great. There's a number of producers, and people are looking at it a little bit differently. You're making it differently. You're considering different picking options, and it really shows in the wines. The quality of the wines is outstanding on all of them. Yeah. They're all clean. They're all really well made. You should be very proud of them.
Appreciate
and
that.
And stylistically, they're really interesting. And so,
thanks. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Not to give away some of my other hobbies, but I always think of what has happened with Petite Sirah is really similar to comic books.
Yeah.
Where for the lifespan of what we think of as a Petite Sirah existing has generally been one style of wine.
Right.
like with comic book means superhero stories.
Right.
But it literally can be anything.
Right.
And I think Petite Sirah has a lot of stories to tell that it really hasn't gotten to tell to most people yet.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show
today.
Thank
you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you very much. You know, this is what happens when you come for the second show. You know, we've already kind of been into it a little bit, and so we get distracted a little more often in the second show.
That's all right.
That's a good thing, though. We're real.
It is.
And we had a guest on who's honest and real.
Absolutely. Right. No, it's all good. It's all good.
I'm having fun.
Yeah. Right on.
All right.
So if you want to check out some of the past episodes, you can go to radiomisfits.com and always search the winemakers. Didn't we have Blair on the show?
We have had Blair on the show.
Yeah. So if you want to go a little bit down the a little bit deeper down the rabbit hole, you can check out that episode with Blair Guthrie and check out more Petite Sirah if you're a Petite Sirah fan, or if you're just a wine lover, go pick up some of these wines. And if you want to go to the event that we've got happening, we're not sure if it's happening because this is coming out on Friday, if it's happening today or if it's happening tomorrow or Sunday, but by all means, you can do that research yourself. We're not going to do it for you. And leave us a review. You can also check us out at the Winemakers Pod at Instagram. We'll post some of the pictures. I've already actually posted some of the labels, so you can check out some of the labels that we're looking at today. And always appreciate you listening, and leave us a review. And we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you very much.